today. I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys, I gotta say, I love this, the concept of Man Show.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Full house this evening. I am Adam Minahan, sitting with David Niles. We have Juan on the buttons. We are joined today with a very special guest, Father David Carvajal from the Diocese of Tulsa in eastern Oklahoma.
If you're going to say David, you can't say Carvajal.
Oh, how do you say it?
Carvajal Casal. You had it.
You're close.
Bro. Father David is here this evening.
Yeah.
No. Let's go back.
Yeah. Father Carvajal, it's wonderful to have you here.
I'm glad, Father Carvajal, I'm glad you did it and not me. Yeah. And it's like, well, actually, I don't really remember exactly how it goes, but it sounds way
you
sweeter.
It was off, fellas, it's good to be with you, Al.
Yeah. We also have Jim here this evening. We also, Dave, do you smell that? You smell that right there?
You smell what the rock is cooking.
It smells like a new Catholic.
Oh, no, not, actually it smells...
Not the scotch.
It smells like peat and smoke.
We also have a new Catholic in here with us this evening, Carter from St. Benedict, our parish.
Yeah, just confirmed.
Just confirmed. Just received...
Freshly minted
the Holy
last,
Sacrifice,
last Sunday.
Or the Holy Eucharist last week is his first one. So, welcome, Carter. Thanks for being here with us this evening. And... We have a lot to talk about this evening. We're going to talk about grace-filled moments. If you're listening to the radio show, make sure you go and subscribe to our podcast. CatholicManShow.com is the best way you can go. And that way you can get the whole episode.
Carter?
Yeah.
Yes.
Carter, would you like a skosh?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So this evening we're drinking Islay Mist. Now, I'm interested to see what Dave's thoughts are on this. Uh-oh.
Sorry, I did my best.
You did all right. I'm interested to see what your thoughts are here, Dave. It is... Oh,
God. I'm just ruining everything.
You're just ruining...
I'm sorry.
All right, he spilled it.
The studio's going to smell good, at least. We got any paper towels?
I think we used to. I don't think we do anymore. We'll catch them later. Right. It's okay. It's all right. Don't worry about it. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
That one's yours, Dave.
Yeah.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
Cheers, gentlemen. So it's an 8-year Islay Mist blended Scotch whiskey. Fun fact, it's the only blended Scotch from Islay that's allowed to have the word Islay in it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Only blended?
Only blended.
Okay.
Try it. I would like to know what your thoughts are. I have not tried it either. Juan is soaking up the spill.
Taking his jacket and soaking up the whiskey. Like, ooh, give me some of that. That's the good.
Okay, so here's
the long-term goodness.
Here's the tasting notes. The nose is an enchanting aroma of sea air, peat, and light smoke. The palate is a wispy peat smoke infused with citrus fruits, cinnamon, and heather. And the finish is a lingering hints of salt with layers of peat smoke. What are your thoughts?
Hmm. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. I thought you were going to say that. And if you weren't, I was going to be disappointed. Here's the reason why.
Okay.
It's mainly Laphroaig.
Ah.
It is almost all Laphroaig mixed with a Speyside.
Okay. And so it's not even a blend of Islas.
No.
And they're allowed to use Isla in the name.
Aged 8 years.
The youngest is 8 years. The youngest whiskey is 8 years anyway.
The youngest, yeah. Here's the best part. You ready?
$20.
$26.
Are you kidding me?
What?
$26.
I was being like outrageously low is what I was going to say. Where did you get it?
I got it at the liquor store. That's where they typically have scotches.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Einstein. Which one?
I think B&B. I think is one.
They've got a good. They've always had a good selection, but their selection has, even recently, it seems like to me anyway, gotten bigger.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I agree with that. Anyway, what are your thoughts? Like. Have you ever had peated scotch before?
I've had some.
Okay,
but not enough to really distinguish it from the rest.
It is to me. It's a great scotch for the winter time, for the cold weather. Dave likes it year-round.
All the time. But yeah, so it does taste... Now that you say that, it's obvious that there's Laphroaig in it. It's got a little bit more sea salt in the front to me. Like, it's not just Laphroaig. There's definitely some other notes to it. It's also, like, a little heavier bodied, I feel like. It's a thicker... its viscosity is a little bit thicker.
Mm-hmm.
Than other whiskeys, but it's good, especially for $26.
$26, it's like the Canadian Mist of I love whiskeys.
Well,
how you like that?
I'm gonna go buy a lot of this.
Yeah. Also, if you go check out thecatholicmanshow.com because we just purchased new Catholic Man Show leather koozies. They're available in our store. And then also last week we showed you guys
with lasers. The koozies may be done with lasers. We're not sure
Most likely
yet.
Not. But we also have new beer glasses as well for the Catholic Man Show.
That are done with lasers.
Yes. 16-ounce beer can style Catholic Man Show beer glasses. So anyway, nice. You can go to thecatholicmanshow.com/store. Check out all of our
Those are
merch.
New glasses. Those are Lady Pamela's favorite glass now. That's what she drinks out of it every day.
Really?
Water. But
yes,
she's a wine drinker and fills it up.
So Father Carvalho, why don't we talk a little bit about what's going on in your life right now? Where are you assigned? How long have you been a priest?
Yeah, I've been a priest since the summer of 2019. And I am now assigned at St. Pius X Parish here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm the parochial vicar there. It's wonderful to be there with all my people. Yeah, it's a wonderful community. It's kind of interesting. You know, we have an Anglo community, English-speaking community, as well as a Hispanic community. And so it's have that great mixture there of two different communities under one parish.
Nice. My brother-in-law, Father Sean O'Brien, he was there also very recently.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, I took his spot.
Yeah. Do you have his room? Are you
I
in
do.
His?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, and Father, do you have a podcast or you will soon have a podcast?
I am working on one.
You're working on a podcast.
Spanish language podcast.
So if anyone else speaks mucho, then...
If you speak mucho, yes. Mm-hmm. Listen mucho.
Mm-hmm.
Bien. Do you have a name?
Yes. So the working title right now, Vale la Pena Vivir, which means life is worth living.
That sounds very Spanish.
Sounds very sheenish.
Yeah, so it is.
Okay.
It's both of those things.
Okay, so not available yet, but coming very soon.
Hopefully soon, yes.
In fact, you were planning on just coming here to see how our setup was.
This is, you guys tricked me.
This is what we do.
I just came to watch.
Sucker.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're like, well, since you're here, we're going to put a microphone in front of you.
Might as well.
So the mission of your podcast, like who's your audience? Who are you?
Yeah, so I'm hoping to talk to families. The idea is life is worth living well as a family. And so talking about anything that I can think of that families would like to hear, especially immigrant families, living in this new culture, you know, this Anglo culture has a lot to offer, but also a lot of warnings that we should be giving new families, you know, as far as the culture goes.
Sure.
How to be Catholic and maintain your identity as a Catholic, as well as your identity as a Hispanic, whatever country you're from. So maintaining the good And kind of adopting some of the good things from here as well. You know, if you're going to be an American, that's good to do, but also to be aware of some of the aspects of this culture that are against our Catholic identity.
Right.
So
we have a lot of things here in the U.S. that you should avoid.
Yeah, I think any culture, you know, you could say the same thing. You know, there's good things and then things to certainly avoid. So
sure. Yeah, because every culture has sinners in it, and then you get problems. You know what I mean? You get problems.
Those people. Yeah. Those sinners.
Yeah. I know. So how big is St. Pius? How many families?
You know? I don't know.
Not sure. I mean, I'm not sure.
It's not a small parish.
It's not small.
No.
The church itself is I think the biggest in the diocese as far as capacity.
Right. It's actually bigger than Holy Family, which you don't think. But
the cathedral, yeah.
So it can hold, many, many people. As far as a good number for you, I really don't know.
Okay.
Right now is a weird time, you know, post-COVID.
Right. Correct. Yeah, yeah. So you've been a priest for, what'd you say, since 19?
Yes, a little over 2 years.
A little over 2 years. What is the one thing about being a priest that you were not expecting? Like that caught you off guard after seminary, after all of your training, all your discernment, you get thrown in and you're like, I was not prepared or did not realize this is what was going to be happening.
Yeah. So I'd say, I kind of knew about this, but I didn't know just how heavy it would be. Emails and meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So
are exhausting.
Don't you think they have a lot of those in hell? I'll bet in hell.
Oh, it's just it's one long conference meeting.
And
meetings.
And the meetings are super long and could have been fixed. It could have been happening on a Zoom call.
Right. We could have wrapped this up in 2 minutes, guys.
Could have been a couple emails.
Yeah. All right. So we're here with Father David Carvajal. We're going to talk about grace-filled moments in our lives, pull a little bit of scripture, and go from there. So we'll be right back.
Hey guys, David Niles here. For those of you who don't know, for my day job, I'm a financial advisor, so I know firsthand how difficult investing can be. That's why I was so excited when we met Mark Lozano, founder and owner of Christ-Centered Capital. Mark's mission is to provide in-depth research and analysis on which companies and organizations align with Christian values and which ones don't. Of course, he's also seeking to provide investment recommendations and stock picks that have financial potential and are also aligned with Christian values. What I really love about what Mark is doing is that he's completely transparent about why a company might be a moral investment versus another one. He leaves it up to you so that you can make informed decisions. He's not just going to say, oh, this one's moral, this one's not. He'll give all of the reasons in the research that he's done with links to articles or whatever it may be, so that you can make the most informed decisions on your own investment portfolios. Because as Catholics, we have a duty to uphold Catholic values, and the same goes with our investments. So we want to be as virtuous as we can be, and Christ-Centered Capital is really invaluable. It's only $7 a month for you to go and sign up to get all of his recommendations and all of his research. To me, it's a no-brainer. If you're an investor and you want more information, go to ChristCenteredCapital.com and make sure to use promo code TCMS 2022 for 1 month of free access, no obligation. That's TCMS, The Catholic Man Show, TCMS 2022.
Welcome back to The Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. You're with Adam Minahan, Father David Carvajal.
I'll take it.
One thing I learned from Father David about speaking Spanish is that you go for the accent,
go hard
for the pronunciation. Because I asked him one time. It's like, I feel like as a guy who obviously doesn't speak Spanish, no matter what I say, like I feel like a poser when I try to say like fajitas. You know, it's like it's fajitas, right? We all know that, nice. Right? But he told me like, no, embrace it. And it will help your Spanish.
Yeah, don't go overboard, of course. Right? Then
that is something that you need to make sure to tell Dave on a lot of different things. Yeah, a lot of different things. Not just Spanish.
It helps. It helps with your confidence. And people love it, too. So
they love making fun of you.
I think people are loving it right now. Yeah. Okay, so you want me to read this?
Yeah, let's start off with the
scripture. This is a book, the Bible.
It's a compilation of them.
From the book of Mark. Mm-hmm. He was a dude who wrote about a guy,
mm-hmm.
lived a long time ago. This is
chapter 8,
verse 22.
Okay.
And they came to Bethsaida, and some people brought to him a blind man and begged him to touch him. You want me to read this whole section, not just verse 22, because that was verse 22.
Through 26.
Through 26. Got it. So they begged him to touch him, and he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands upon him, he asked him, "Do you see anything?" And he looked up and said, "I see men, but they look like trees walking." Then again he laid his hands upon his eyes, and he looked intently and was restored and saw everything clearly. And he sent him away to his home, saying, "Do not even enter the village."
Okay, so in prayer this week, I was speaking with the Lord, and it kept coming back to me about these grace-filled moments. Juan, if you'll keep that up there for a little bit, so that way I can reference it as we go. But it just kept coming back to me, the amount of grace that has just been given, not only into my life, but my family's life, my wife's life, my parents' life, my sister's lives, just everybody, you know, our friends, you know, Dave, Juan, Jim. I mean, all everybody who's in my life. I was just like seeing all these different ways in which God was acting through my life, and the amount of blessings and grace that He's bestowed upon me, and times that I have not realized the amount of grace that was given to me, that has totally changed the course of and direction of my life.
Right.
And then on Friday we had a retreat for the Chancery, a Lenten retreat. And the retreat was given on this verse, on these verses, 22 through 26 of Mark chapter 8. And it just like all connected really well for me. So if we go through this just a little bit, you know, and so people bringing a blind man to Jesus and begging him just to touch him, right? Just so that way he can be cured. Now, Jesus could easily just touch the man and he can see, right? Right.
Sure.
But what does Christ do? Christ takes him by the hand and leads him away from everybody. Okay, so he could have easily done it right then and there, but he takes him by the hand and leads him away. Now, I think, like, as if I was put myself in that man's position, how glorious it would be to have our Lord holding on to my hand, leading me to a place that He wants to do things in my life. Right, so he's holding on to you, and he's leading you. Actually, you can make the argument that the man can see more clearly holding Jesus' hand walking away than he can even when he gets his sight restored.
Yeah.
Okay, and so then
in a way.
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah.
Okay, and then what happens is he spits on his eyes, and the man can see, but not completely clear. Right, so he says that he sees men, but they look like they're trees walking around. And so Christ does it again. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not because Christ didn't do well the first time.
Right.
You know, it's not like, oh, let's do a take two. You know, that didn't work very well. Mm. But it was on the blind man, right? Is the blind man...
it's not like he's Moses who had to strike the rock two times, you know?
Right, right, yeah. But it was the blind man who saw a little bit and then was able to see clearly the second time. And then what does Christ do? Christ tells him not to go back into the village, but to go back home. And so I was thinking about this. How many times has Christ given me grace? And maybe I have not been able to, like, disposed to be receiving the grace in fullness. And through His mercy and justice, He gives me the grace just enough to see, to lead me towards more opportunities to see, like, okay, now you see just a little bit more. Now you see just a little bit more. Now you see what my plan is for you. Yeah. Knowing that if He showed me the whole picture right up front, I wouldn't be able to respond handle appropriately.
It. Right. Or maybe you'd be afraid or right. Maybe, you know, yeah.
So then... you see a little bit more, a little bit more. And then what does He do? But He asks you to go back and not go back to the whole village. And I was thinking, okay, so why is that? Like, why in that part of the story is He asking us not to go back into the village?
Yeah, because it seems like He's got some pretty faithful friends.
Friends, right.
Like some good people in the village.
Right, but also how many times have we been given a grace and maybe not been... able, because it's just so new that maybe we don't know how to use it very well. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not actually like it's a virtue, like you can do a virtuous act, but that doesn't mean you are a virtuous man.
Sure. Or have the virtue.
Or have the virtue. Yeah. Right. Or have the virtue of whatever that is.
Right.
So I was just reflecting upon this over the weekend, and I can remember so many times throughout my life where grace has been bestowed upon me. Grace has been bestowed upon me little by little by little as Christ is like walking with me through my life to give me more of what, like to unite my will with his.
Yeah. And I think like this guy, I think I really identify him with him because it seems like he's not a man who was born blind. He gets his sight
right, because
a little
says,
bit, and he's like, they look like trees. Well, you know, so he knows what a tree is. And so, like, for me, I really identify that. I was born Catholic, raised Catholic. As a youth, I embraced the faith and willingly blinded myself, you know, in college, so to speak, you know, as I walked away from it, walked away from practicing, and then kind of came back little by little, you know, as, you know, had those grace-filled moments. And, you know, one thing you said in the beginning, you know, you don't know it at the time. It's like, yeah, you don't have a grace. There's not like, oh, the sixth sense is the grace sense where you can feel, oh, am I getting like any extra graces right now? You know, you never really, almost never do you feel in those moments when they're like, oh,
this is it.
Right. Like wow, I'm just like really, every now and then you
grace do, button has been pushed.
You do receive real consolation, but, and that is itself a grace, but I don't think that those are actually your most grace-filled moments. I think they're probably on the lower end of the scale of what are your most grace-filled moments. You know what I mean? Because I think a lot of times, well, certainly in my own life, when I look back, the moments that have been the most grace-filled, like, where my life pivoted, you know, there was a decision I had to make or something that happened to me that all like made a course correction. I didn't know it at the moment. You know, it didn't seem like, today something profound happened to me. You know what I mean? I just thought it was regular and kept going. But it was, you know, looking back, Christ, like, on the ship with me going, hey, Dave, what's that over there? And when I turn away, he's like cranking the wheel the other way. You know, it's like, and I turn back, I don't know. I didn't see anything. Oh, okay, never mind.
I'm going to go take a nap.
Right.
Yeah, there seems to be a real progression here in this story with Christ and this blind man. Just like for many of us in our spiritual life, there seems to be a real progression that's pretty slow. You know, not many people, like you're saying, have this one moment, you know, that's like the moment that changes their whole life. There's so many different moments. And just like this man is blind and then eventually, like slowly, comes out of his blindness, we could say that's ignorance of not just the faith, but how to live out the faith. Because I had a very similar story as you, David, in high school. You know, towards the end of my high school, I started being open to the grace that was already there in so many different ways. People put into my life, people just saying one word or a scripture verse that comes up that is exactly what I needed to hear at that very moment. Things like that just progressively waking me up and making me less blind to how to live out the faith, and or really just how to see that there is grace there in the first place. And so I love how this passage shows that progression. He's brought out of his old ways, taken literally by the hand by Christ, out of his old ways, and then slowly brought out of that blindness, not right away. As you said, Christ could easily bring him out of it by, you know, slapping his fingers or just the thoughts, but it's very sacramental how he does so. And
yeah,
in my life, the sacraments have ultimately been what have shown me the grace that's there. And so I love how sacramental this passage is, just how Christ uses, you know, touch and his words and brings him and walks with him. It's extremely sacramental.
Right, and even before it all begins, the man has this grace of these intercessors, these friends.
Friends, right.
You know, who are essentially interceding on his behalf, bringing him to Christ, literally and figuratively, right? And
the faith, the friends...
I know my mom, you know, was like praying for me a lot.
Right.
She's told me that, so...
And the faith that the friends had to bring him to Christ, just for Christ to touch him.
Right.
You know, so Christ, they knew that all we have to do is get this Jesus guy to touch you.
Yeah.
And you'll be, you can see again. So, I mean, there's so many things in this, like, what, four verses?
That
you can apply to your life. So anyway, when we get back, I want to just talk about some moments that we've had personally, so we can be grateful for them and maybe reflect upon them and be aware of these things.
Great.
We'll be right back.
Okay, guys, March 2nd is Ash Wednesday. And that means over a billion people are going to start living different in some way. Maybe giving up chocolate or alcohol or whatever. For a lot of Catholics, Lent is a time of finding the easiest way to give something up. But at the end of those 40 days, did that sacrifice really make a difference? This year, there's a new opportunity out there specifically for men that will actually help you grow closer to God and become a better man. You've heard me talk about Exodus 90 probably several times, but let me tell you about Exodus Lent. It's a 40-day journey that will challenge you to dig a little deeper. If your first reaction is, bro, I'm absolutely not taking cold showers. Well, then you're in luck, my friend. Men who take on the Exodus Lent get to take warm showers. They get to drink alcohol, and when you're with others, watch TV and sports. But don't be fooled. This will still be a challenging 40 days of preparation for living the Christian life for the rest of your life. Let me tell you how it works. First, over the 40 days of Lent, men commit to daily prayer, setting aside a minimum of 20 minutes to spend with the Lord. Each day includes a scripture reading and reflection written to help men better understand, grow in, and live virtue. Second, more than just giving up chocolate, men take up a range of disciplines and sacrifices for the season of Lent. Sweets, snacks, social media, all gone. Third, men commit to a fraternity of 5 to 7 men. Each week the fraternity meets to pray together, check in, hold each other accountable, and encourage one another. On Easter Sunday, you'll walk away with a new and lasting understanding of what it means to live the full Christian life. Chocolate bunnies and all. Sign up now at exoduslent.com/TCMS, short for The Catholic Man Show. That's exoduslent.com/TCMS.
Welcome back to The Catholic Man Show. Talking about grace-filled moments, one of the fruits of Exodus 90 this go-around for me has been being able to spend a lot more reflective time in contemplation, meditation and contemplation, and just being, you know, just being able to take a step back and see everything, or trying to see what Christ is doing in my life, everything that Christ is doing in my life currently, and what he has done. It's something that's really hard to do in this fast-paced world, something that I don't think that a lot of people are used to doing. And a lot of times I've noticed that the longer that you're able to do this consistently, the more that you're able to see. Or at least for me.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so I'm able to see a lot more of what Christ has been doing in my life, because I've taken more time to do so, and that really just makes a grateful heart. You know, it just crushes pride, because you just realize the amount of things that you've done wrong. You know, the amount of things that when I've relied on myself, I've just fallen. You know, that's when I've fallen face first.
Sure.
And then the things that have gone so well, and like that has just been, there's no way that could have done, you know, could have been anything that I've done. One of the things that that really hit me this week was, so I was thinking like, okay, so what are the things that really changed my life? There were a lot, obviously. One was there's one morning where I was just finished eating and I was feeling really warm, and all of a sudden I had this like cold feeling on my head, and I thought, well, I'm gonna let that slide. I don't know what that is.
You're gonna ignore it?
Yeah, I'm just gonna ignore it. And then it happened a second time, and I kind of got a little angry about it.
That you're having like the chills or something?
No, like this cold wetness on my forehead. And then a third time it happened, and I just started screaming. And this was June 22nd, 1986, when I got baptized.
What is that?
And so So that was
well played. I was like, what the heck is this story
going?
Like, I have never heard this story before.
But that's obviously,
and I know all your stories. Okay.
Yeah. But one of the things that actually did, like, I was thinking about. So obviously, there was one when
at least you weren't baptized in the Eastern Orthodox Church, you know?
Yeah, where you're just getting dunked over and over again.
Right.
Yeah, on both sides. But one was obviously witnessing my wife receive 5 sacraments in like 3 months.
Beautiful.
That was just something that I actually emotionally couldn't control a lot of times, and that's really weird for me because most of the time I'm not much of a crier, but it was like, wow, that is just intense. Another one was, somebody told me this, and I may have said it on the show before, I don't know, but it's worth repeating again if I have. When you have a child, the first time that the child is placed into your arms, mm-hmm. really take a moment and just absorb what is happening. You know, look at the, like, study the child, like, kind of embrace what's going on around you. Like, take some, like, memory pictures, if you will.
And put the phone down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's, yeah, that should go without saying, but,
yeah.
But just embrace the moment with this child. Like, study the child, look around you, hear, like, you know, engage all as many senses as possible, right? Like, just kind of take in what's happening around you, the sounds that are happening around you, the feeling of holding this child, the look of the child, you know, just because there's going to be times where you, as the child is growing up, you're going to want to just be, you know, just you're disciplining the child, you're frustrated with the child is crying constantly, and you need those moments to reflect back on this beauty, on this gift, on Christ giving you, you know, this child, this new life.
Yeah.
But another one that I really thought about, Dave, was one with you, was with right after college, when you kept calling me and said, like, hey, dude, we should live together in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going back to Tulsa, I'm going back to Tulsa. We should live together.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. But typical Catholic or college kids, we didn't look for a house. We didn't do really much of anything.
Right.
We were like, yeah, that's a good idea, but that's about as far as it went,
uh-huh.
right? And then, like, every, like, a month later, Dave would text me and be like, hey, we should start looking for a house. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I used to be, like, responsible, I guess. I didn't know that.
And then, but then we didn't look for one, you know? And then, like, we finally, as we were moving into Tulsa, realized, hey, there's a house for rent. And it was, like, by one of my bosses, like, that owned
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you had a connection with the, and it was on, like, the cool,
Brookside.
On Brookside, you know, like the cool part of town. And
but we both were not taking our faith super seriously at that time. But those moments, those times
mm-hmm.
that you kept pushing me or, you know, pushing us to, hey, we should live together. Hey, yeah. we should live together. Those are not moments that you would realize would be a life-changing, pivotal yeah. moment in
yeah,
your life.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, you don't realize. Like, if we hadn't moved in after college, like, I don't know where I'd be in my faith right now.
Right.
Like, this show wouldn't exist. You know, I doubt we'd be living across the street from each other. You mm-hmm. know, there's just a lot of things. Like, I might not even be friends with Juan. No, you know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, who knows?
Yeah.
So, it was a pivotal moment.
But we couldn't see that at the time, right? So, and then
right.
we saw a little bit as we moved in together, because then we started, our friendship started growing. We started taking our faith more seriously. We saw a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so anyway, those are kind of some of the things that I was thinking about this week.
Yeah, and one thing you mentioned to me, Adam, before the show is just like the amount of grace it takes to, like, convert, change a heart. I mean, I imagine that that's a lot. You know, that's a...
Yeah, that was something
that's
that
like
I was,
a, that's a gift. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's something that I was... I'm glad you brought that up, because I was also thinking about... that. So that led me to this idea of the moment that I started taking my faith more seriously. And I was living not in the state of sanctifying grace. I was not, you know, I was living a heathen lifestyle at times. But I started, like, praying a little bit more. I had the St. Joseph prayer book in my car, and I would pray, you know, specific prayers before work. We started going to Mass every Sunday.
Yeah.
And there were, like, these little things.
That was a good idea.
That was a great idea.
Yeah,
usually a good idea.
which we also went beforehand. We went to confession just to make sure we get proper right. order. Order
Perfect.
Is important here. But The amount of grace that it had to take for me to change my way in my life is so abundant. It's such a complete gift that it's hard for me to even understand the amount of grace given.
Oh, he pursues us.
So, constantly.
So hard.
Right.
With all of that grace. But he's a gentleman, as we say, right? He's not going to force us, but he's going to give us everything we can. He can, mm-hmm. you know, for us to, like you say, convert and turn our hearts to him. That's something I've seen in my life is he does so, but he has done so in such a subtle way so many different times, in so many different quiet moments or moments. Like I said, just like someone says something that's like, man, that's what I needed to hear, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's one moment in particular, though, that was... that could be my pivotal moment. I had just graduated high school. I had no idea what I was going to do. I was looking for a job, and I still hadn't decided on a college or even a path. But thankfully, seminary had been on my mind. I still had no idea what that meant. I just knew that maybe Christ was calling me to the priesthood, but I didn't know very much about what that meant, practically speaking. So I was looking for a job, and it had been a couple weeks into the summer by then, and... I said a prayer. I finally remembered. Maybe I should pray about this. maybe that'll help.
Yeah. And how do I know if I'm supposed to be a priest? I just can't figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. And so the next day, I checked Facebook, and I had in my inbox one message, and it was, "We need one more guy for the last TOTUS to his team to be completed." And I was like, wow, okay, that's perfect. I had just started praying, and then I just heard that. They need one more guy so they can complete that team.
And they'll pay you.
And they'll pay me. So it's a job, which uh-huh. I wanted. And that's beyond that, I didn't think much other than the fact that I knew what TOTUS TOOS was. I remember as a kid going. So I was familiar with it. So I went, and they were literally about to start. They were just like 2 days away from it. And that really set me in a totally different direction, because that was the first time that summer, that was 9 weeks of being a missionary, that I had encountered young Catholics actually living the faith, which is crazy to say because I went to a Catholic school. But, you know, that was the first time where I had met several young Catholics who were on fire with the faith. And so that changed my whole trajectory. Then I knew, okay, that prayer that got me this position, I should do a little more of that.
Did you do TOTUS TOOS at the same time as Pamela?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
That same summer.
That's what I thought. Were you on the? You weren't on the same team though,
no,
were you?
No.
Okay.
I think we shared a parish at one point. Like we had two teams there.
I just want to give a shout out to TOTUS TOOS. Mm-hmm. Like if you find yourself in that situation, you just graduated from high school looking for a job, or you're in college. So TOTUS TOOS has formed Pamela, my wife. She tells stories to me all the time about it. About like, oh, everything she learned. You know, how to pray, the liturgy, the hours, and just like all of these great traditions that we have now incorporated into our family. If she hadn't done TOTUS TOOS, I wouldn't know about, you know what I mean? Like it was a huge formative thing for her, and it's benefited our family tremendously. Just the 2 years that she was a TOTUS TOOS. I guess you are a missionary.
Yes.
Yeah.
So cheers to TOTUS.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. So like,
I'm all about that program.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheers. Great. To TOTUS TOOS and to Jesus and Mary and
totally yours, being totally yours.
Yeah. And all of that stuff.
One of the priests here in the diocese, Father David Webb, received his priestly calling at TOTUS TOOS.
That's right.
That's right. We did it the same summer. And he was one of those guys that I met that, like I said, was on fire with the faith. It was beautiful. Yeah, we're still good friends.
I also want to...
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Jim, you're supposed to remind me, but it's okay. I got you covered of reminding me. To give a shout out to Gabe here in Oklahoma. He is a high school student, and he took on himself to... by Plato and Aristotle to start reading it. He was listening to our show and said, like, I want to start reading some of the good books. And so he took a dive and did that on his own.
He knows
so,
Plato is not like the
not dough. Like Play-Doh.
Right.
Right. Okay. Very good.
Good.
Distinction.
Good. Good.
If job, he reads Gabe. Aristotle, he'll be able to know more categories and distinctions like Plato and Plato. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
We'll be right back.
Have you ever wanted to go to Ireland and tour County Cork, or have a beer in Dublin, or see the Cliffs of Moher? Well, we are partnering up with Select International Tours, and we are planning a Ireland pilgrimage this year. Go to selectinternationaltours.com/Catholic Man Show, and we will keep you posted on everything that's going on. Ireland is one of the places that you are able to travel to, whether you have a vaccine, whether you don't have a vaccine. There's no quarantine. All you have to do is have a negative test within a couple days. So anyway, we're planning a trip to Ireland. We would love to have you there. Go to selectinternationaltours.com/Catholic Man Show. And let's have a beer together and cheers to Jesus in Ireland.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Catholic Man Show with Adam Minahan, David Niles. I'm David Niles. We also have Father Carvajal, Father David Carvajal, as our special guest, priest of God. Thanks for being here, Father.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about grace, which is really the best. I think it is the best.
Both sanctifying and actual.
I challenge
both
you
are awesome.
To find something that's better than grace. I don't think it can be done. If you say Jesus, that doesn't count because I said something. Right. Okay, so.
Distinctions.
Distinctions. Anyway, I love grace personally. I try to hoard it. I try to keep a lot of it for myself, and I try to use it up as fast as I can. Because the thing about it is that it doesn't actually keep very well. It's sort of like the manna in the desert. Like the next day, it's not going to be any good. You got to use it right now when you got it, because we're only given grace. Like, the grace you have is for this moment. It's not for the next moment.
Mm-hmm. You can't store it up.
You cannot. Right? I have not been successful. I'll just leave it that way.
It's going to bear fruit for others as well.
So. Right. Yeah, maybe I'm doing it wrong, but I cannot do it, I'll tell you.
Father, I do want to, like, pick back up on something that you said at the last break. You were talking about how, you know, that Christ is constantly trying to pursue us and giving us this grace. And I think that's a good thing to think about. Because I know that I've fallen into the trap of feeling like that the devil is just after me so hard, right? The world, the flesh, the devil, like everything is after me so hard. And I just feel like it's constantly like I open one door, it's like, ah, and close it. It's like next door, it's like, ah, yeah, you know, it's like absolutely. Constantly. And, you know, I have fallen into this trap of feeling like I just wish that Christ would pursue me as hard as like the world, the flesh, and the devil are pursuing me, because it just seems like everywhere I'm turning, there's temptation, there's ways of messing things up, which is not the right way to think about it. But I have caught myself many of times thinking I just wish that Christ would pursue me as hard as all these other temptations do. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think you're right about the first point.
And then wrong about the second.
Yes. We can start with that first point. You know, he's prowling around like a, trying to devour us, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lion trying to devour us. That's Satan right there. That's the enemy. And in all the many ways that he does so, right? It's not, I'm so annoyed with those caricatures that we see sometimes of evil, you know, of like, it's this really, really bad guy, and it's very obvious who he is, and it's very obvious what he's doing. That's not always what Satan is, right? He works in so many subtle ways, and that's how he wants to get us, right? In any way that he can. But Christ is pursuing us even more so, and he works through other people as well.
I think that a lot of times it's because it's my blind. It goes back to my blindness, right? It's that I'm not even being able to see all the things that Christ is doing for me. And like I feel like, oh, there's a temptation or something like that. And it's like, yeah, there's a temptation. However, there's this huge grace bomb that is being dropped right now that you're not doing this temptation or you're not, you know, succumbing to this temptation. And the reason why is because Christ is constantly pursuing me.
Or being tempted in far stronger, you know, more devious ways.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's just, that's the thing about it. That's what I kind of meant earlier, is that you don't necessarily feel the grace. You know, in fact, most of the time you don't. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of growing in faith, you know, and Christ pursues us so that we might learn to pursue him too, right? He also wants to be pursued because it's good for us to search for him. Even though he's always with us, it's good for us to learn to look for him so that we can start to see him more, to become less blind, like the guy in the parable. It's not a parable, in the story of the miracle, because he's there, and if we just look around, we'll learn to see him, and we'll like learn to have those more and more, those eyes of faith, where we can grow and start to overcome some of those temptations and really start to see beyond them. I mean, I think as you grow in the interior life, those temptations, you just, you know, they're, you rise above them, you know, instead of like being here in your face, they're just kind of like nipping at your heel, you know, just like whatever. Mm-hmm. They don't bother you anymore, right? Just because you've learned to depend, I don't know, your relationship with Christ has become more face to face.
Well, and you stop relying on you don't react to your appetites as much.
Right.
You don't let your appetites control
you. And you don't rely on yourself. You know, that's one of the, right. That's one of the things is you see all the world, the flesh and the devil, how, you know, things are terrible. Everywhere you look, you can find Satan. And if you think it's up to you to do something about it, which is a temptation, right? Especially if you're early in your walk with Christ, you might think like, oh, we got to do something about this. You know, and we do. So, I mean, we can't sit back and do nothing in the face of evil. But if you think I'm going to stand up and do, you know, like, and I'm going to bring down this evil today, then you're actually doing exactly what the evil one
he's
wants
already
you
got
to
you.
Do. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. He's already got you. You're right. I was just at St. Michael's Abbey in Orange County, California last week for my yearly canonical retreat.
Nice.
Shout out to St. Michael's Abbey. Wonderful place. The Norbertines there took great care of us. My friends and I who took a retreat there. And they just built this new abbey because, praise God, they're flourishing with vocations. And you'll see in their church, in the reredos, there's an image of St. Michael, the archangel. He's defeating the serpent, the dragon. And you don't see like this big old sword. You see this very, very long spear, but it's extremely thin. And the artist's reasoning is, also you see his eyes are looking at our Blessed Mother because it's the chapel of the Assumption of Our Lady. Mm-hmm. So our Blessed Mother is here at the forefront, and then St. Michael is looking at her as he's just like nonchalantly defeating Satan. And what he's using is not himself. It's meant to portray that he's not like using his own force, it's the force of Jesus Christ, right? And so exactly what you're saying, we are tempted through pride to think, oh, I can do this, you know? Maybe I'll get a little bit of that grace and then I can do this. No, it's like, no, we can't. It's entirely through the working of Jesus Christ. Even St. Michael himself is relying upon that power of Christ.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think sort of like that, the more, like as you reflect on these grace-filled moments in your life, the more you can see and realize how many of them you had. Because, you know, when you first start thinking, it's like, oh, I've had like three of these moments in my life that were like really profound. It's like, three?
Mm-hmm. You've had three you in had the last
like,
hour.
You had like 3,000 today.
Yes. Right.
You know, and like that's the truth. But you don't see them because we're blind to how much Christ loves us. Mm-hmm. You know, we cannot see that. And in the beginning of your walk with him,
Christ says, "Don't go back to the village. Go back to your house, and so that way you can reflect on it. You can understand this."
Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. But I think that in the beginning, if you were to see and know how much he loved you, you wouldn't be able to. Your blindness in that regard is a blessing, right? So that you can actually grow. You know, if it's like asking a newborn to start running, right. You know, you haven't developed the strength. The virtue is really what it is. You're not virtuous enough to withstand that level of intense of love, right? Mm-hmm. And so as we reflect on these grace-filled moments, see how we've responded to Christ in the past, responded with love and with a yes to him.
Yeah.
Sometimes that required courage. But the thing that we fear, if you think back on it, like the thing you were afraid of, it was fine. You know what I mean? Like, was it actually that bad? It's like, no, actually it was awesome. You know, I was so afraid of this happening. And then the exact thing that I was afraid of happened, and it was sweet. You know, like, it actually was the best thing that ever happened to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, so the more we think about that, we can see, I think, like, the pattern in our life can come to perceive that Christ, we can see him more in his hiddenness mm-hmm. in our day-to-day life. And that's so important because that recognition is part of that interior life where you're all the time holding, you know, like holding him in your mind and in your heart as you do life, you know, as you do the day, as you just go about day to day. Mm-hmm. And that is not something I'm good at. You know, I, when I'm like working on the computer, sending emails, like I'm not thinking about Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to be, mm-hmm. But just not, it's just not the reality. You know what I mean? But, something that I strive for, and I'll probably strive for it my whole life,
mm-hmm.
and I'll get it when I die, is what I'm hoping for. At least then. At least then.
At that.
Right.
Bare minimum there.
Hopefully sooner, but yeah. At least then.
Yeah, I mean, the more you spend that time, you realize that the more of this, like, glorious martyrdom that you have on yourself, like, opens up new life for all these different things that could happen in your life,
uh-huh.
right? So it's these, okay, I'm not going to do that. You know what, Lord? You know how bad I desire to do these things that are sinful. Like, I want to do them. I have an attachment to them. I do not want to do them anymore. And so I give this to you, and mm-hmm. and I offer this up to you, and ask you to take this from me.
Right.
Your will be done. And then, like, you see these fruits that you continue to see these graces being bestowed upon you, that are very little, that are very subtle.
Yeah.
But then you realize, oh, this is the walk with Christ.
I think there's also an aspect of perception and just being open, or just keeping our eyes open throughout the day and noticing how he's working in other people. And at the end of the day, say, praise God for that. He's working through that person.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And the people that he puts in your life.
Yes.
Because he's actually doing everything. You know what right. I mean? Like, yes. every moment of the day yeah. is working for his good, if you let it.
So we're out of time on the radio. If you go to thecatholicmanshow.com, you can check out this full podcast and over 300 more that we've done in the past. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
Cheers.
As I have, like, progressed, you know, in the, like, 4 feet that I've made it so far in my spiritual life.
That's further than I am.
I mean, however far that is, you know.
Just a little bit lower.
Is the more I've come to realize is that following God's will, which I used to view as, like, very difficult and arduous because it was such a mystery to me, right? Like, I want to do it. Like, God, if you would send me an email or, like, I will do absolutely anything that you want me to.
I will give up my free will, just so you know.
Right. Yeah. Like whatever it is. I don't care. Like, I'll do anything
right.
if you just tell me to do it. I don't know. Like, I'm not receiving your signals. You know? So I used to feel like, you know, like, oh, man, like, the Lord's will is tough. To decipher. And as I've gotten older or just progressed more, Exodus 90, I've talked about it before, just that was a big grace moment for me, was like doing Exodus 90 the first time because it taught me to pray, which make a difference, I'll tell you. I've realized that doing the Lord's will is actually very restful. It's actually leisurely. It's not arduous at all. I used to be so worried about it, and now I don't worry about it at all, right? It's like, okay, it's like, oh, I have these attachments to sin. Yep, I do. You know, and it's like, Christ,
there's a thorn in my side, Christ.
It's like, yeah, I have these attachments, Lord, but you know my heart, you know my desires, and I don't desire to be attached to those. I understand that I am. Christ, you know that I am, and I know that when you desire it for me, you will take these attachments away. And in the meantime, you know, Lord, whatever it is, I will endure. You know, and so you just, like, I don't worry about stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you actually don't have to worry, because I realize now that, like, being worried about, am I doing his will? You know, it's very prideful. Mm. You know, I was worried that it was up to me. And all I need to do is say yes every day, and Christ will actually, he's actually steering the boat. You know, and I'm like controlling one of the mainsails, if you know, if you get a sailboat analogy, you know, like that has very little to do with stuff. You know, I'm not going to be able to change the direction, and I'm sitting here worried like I'm in control. But it, so like that's what I've learned is that
you're Dwight on the ship thinking that you're you're guiding the ship.
So, yeah, that's exactly right. You know. So it's actually like I found
assistant manager.
It's just like yeah, assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah,
not assistant regional manager. But that's what I've learned is that actually like there's a great leisure and a rest that I have found in learning to respond just even a little bit to God's call. Like, and it just makes me think like man, especially when times are difficult or like. When I see trials that other people are going through in life, and I'd like have actually said to people before, like, I don't even know what you would, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have faith.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I would be a wreck. I cannot even imagine what I would be like.
So something about grace that it blew my mind one day in the Diaconate Information Program. For some reason, I always thought of grace as this gradation of different types of graces that come through you through your life. And the teacher was talking about how really since all the grace stems from God, like all the grace shares in the divine essence of God, and how for some reason I just thought that I was getting some like lower grace like. You know, I couldn't handle it, but it's like, no.
You're not ready for the barrel strength yet?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, no. Every time you have received, you know, communion, it's like, how am I not dead with the amount of grace that I that I just got? Yeah, we have blessed Imelda that died.
I have wondered that about you.
Yeah, I have
many
too.
Many times. Like, I don't know how that guy's not dead. It's amazing.
So, Father, I don't know if you can comment to a little bit of that, like, grace and the grappling of, like, how much we could just really held if our cup was bigger, you know, that kind of...
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is St. Therese talking about, you know, whether we have a little thimble. If that's all we have, that's our capacity, praise God when that's filled. You know, we want that to be filled, and that's all we should desire. Kind of like you're talking about, David.
Because he made you to be a thimble.
Absolutely.
And that's how he made you to be.
And we're all part of the body of Christ.
Right.
And we all.
Yeah, and I think of, you know, his yoke is easy and sweet. And that's so hard. That seems like a very simple passage, but it's the hardest thing, I think. One of the hardest things to accept. Because once you get to this point where you think, okay, I want to do God's will, you still have to get over the fact that it's him who is right next to you in the yoke.
Right.
If you even get to that point of thinking, yes, I want to get in the yoke, then you have to accept, oh, it's going to actually be very sweet, very easy once I relinquish power into his hands.
Yeah. And I heard a commentary on that passage that like easy is like not exactly a great translation. Like it literally it's well fitted. My yoke is well fitted. Which means it's like it's made exactly just for you. Like the burdens that you will carry are hand-picked for you to bring you like further along in the interior life. And so like when you think
that's
about
beautiful.
When you think it's like that's actually like a that makes sense if he's talking about like taking a yoke upon yourself.
Yeah.
Because you know they would try to curve the yoke so that it fit a person's shoulders, and if it didn't fit well, you know, it pushes on me right here, and it would, it would cause pain. But yeah,
like the pain that I experienced driving today.
Right. Yeah. Because your lumbar support is not well fitted.
Right.
Or your lumbar is no longer well fitted
right.
to
should be.
To being youthful. Right. Yeah. But, you know, that's another thing that I think when you start to see with the eyes of faith, you start to also welcome. As difficult as this is, I mean, I don't want to downplay this as if this is not a challenge, because this is one of the hardest things you'll do in life is to embrace your burdens, to embrace the struggles that the Lord does put in your life. Often those struggles come in the form of other people.
To sanctify you.
Right. And it's part of accepting those other people, like myself.
Yeah. David.
You're welcome. You are mucho welcome. but learning to love them, even for what they, for their faults, you know, like that's what a saint does, you know, and that's what we're called to do. And when we when we push back on them and reject them, we're really rejecting the graces that Christ is offering to us in those moments.
Well, I think that goes back to keeping our eyes open. You know, if we see how, I mean, of course we can see the splinter in their eye, but if we see the virtues that they have or how God might be working in their life, then we can say praise God for that virtue, and even go as far as saying, especially if they're an enemy or someone we struggle to love, say, God, amplify that virtue, amplify that grace that I'm seeing in that person, so that I can emulate that. So I can go as far as to desire to emulate that person who I struggle to love, which I think is, like you're saying, what the saints would do. We say at times, he doesn't send us anything that we can't handle, but I mean, it's kind of like you're saying. He does, actually.
Yeah, he does a lot. So that way he turned to him.
Yeah, he sends more than we right. are capable of handling on our own.
On our own. That's our own. Exactly asterisk right. right there. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You said asterisk. That's asterisk. Great. That's one of Lady Pamela's like pet peeves. When people say asterisks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is how most people say it.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
So I just want to compliment you.
Thank you. It's a, there's a grace.
Yeah,
there's a grace.
So, you know, I've been to Bishop Emeritus Slattery for spiritual direction many times. And that's one of the things that I really have learned from him. It's that, you know, I'd be talking to him about, I've realized that, I really struggle with this. And he'd stop me. He's like, that's a grace. What a grace that you had, that you realized that you struggled with this. And it's like, oh.
No, I was wanting you to take that grace away, or that struggle away. No. Listen to the rest of it.
Right, and so
I'm really struggling with this. I just don't want to do it anymore.
The 10th or 15th time that he did that to me, I started to I think I finally get it. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a grace, to be able to reflect, to see myself.
Yeah, thank you.
A little bit with just a little tiny sliver of who I really am. You know, talk about another thing we talked about. Oh, if you could see how much Christ loved you, you might die. I think if you could see yourself the way he really is, through his eyes, the way you really are, I think that would also for sure kill you.
See ya.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm just pretty sure I would be horrified to death. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good thought. Yes. Just how much love he has in that sight when he looks upon you. Oof. Yeah.
From the cross.
Yes.
You know, that's what I picture him from the cross.
I do that as well, yeah.
Looking at me in with adoration. This gaze of love. You know, he's not up there going hey, what the heck, man?
Yeah, look what I'm doing for you.
What? You know, he's not so indignant.
Unnatural.
Right, he's not annoyed.
Yeah.
He's up there it's his own love that's holding him to the cross. Mm. You know what I mean? I heard a quote from somebody who's
Father Paul Murray.
Yeah, did he say it? I know I heard it from him, but I didn't know if it was his quote. Anyway, it's
seemed like
that those nails couldn't hold him to the cross if his own love for you didn't hold him there first, which is it's a beautiful thing to ponder.
Right.
So that's why I love grace.
Big fan.
I'll take some more. Yes.
You just can't, like I said, it can't save it.
Mm.
No. So maybe we wrap up with Father, if there's any thoughts on how to be well disposed to grace, maybe through the sacraments, sacramentals, prayer life, maybe some tips on how to be,
Catholic hacks.
Any Catholic hacks on how to dispose yourself towards grace or to grace, be open to it.
I'd say one way, as we've been talking, just being observant, you know, how God is working in your life, in those around you, even those not even that close to you. And at the end of the day, doing an examine of your life, of your day, and including that, you know, thank you, a good bit of gratitude for those things that you've noticed. And it'll come gradually, as we've been talking about. And of course, sacramentally, being open to grace means coming to Christ so that he can forgive us of our sins through the sacrament of penance and reconciliation, so that he can allow us to be disposed to that grace, because we have shut ourselves off from that grace through any of our mortal sins, and we come dangerously close through our venial sins. So going very often to that sacrament, and of course coming often to the sacrament of the Eucharist, which comes right after. So those are, I think, the three ways which are huge.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. This is something that I still struggle with to this day, and I think probably it's a common conundrum. Let's say you've reached the point in your life where you no longer are really committing mortal sins. I remember getting there, because it was not that long ago.
Tuesday.
Yeah. And then, like, before that, it was easy to examine my conscience. I knew exactly what I had done, right? And then I got to this point where it's like, all right, mortal sin is not really the thing that I'm struggling. It's not my jam anymore. And I found it very challenging to examine my conscience. I would sit there and be like, I guess I'm pretty much perfect. You know what I mean? And I knew that was not the case. But
we knew it too.
Yeah, everybody did. Good. Yeah,
because I had myself fooled for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, your wife called me and like she was.
Do you have any advice on examining your conscience for a person who has reached this point in their spiritual life?
That's a great question. I think there are some really, really good in-depth examinations that are out there. Off the top of my head, I do not have one that I could shout out, but there's some really in-depth ones that do a really good job of looking even at those, even at venial sins. Like I said, we don't overlook those. We should not. I think digging through the internet looking for some of those.
Mm-hmm. That's good, because the ones that I've, I haven't done an extensive search. The ones that I've seen, you know, like, they're in there's a pile of them in the confession line, you know.
Sure.
I've read through those, and it's like, you know, typically.
Did you steal
like,
anything?
Right, exactly.
Did you kill anybody?
Right, you know, like.
Did you divorce your wife? You know, like.
I don't know. Typically, I found just those they're always very surface level. And you know, I understand, you know, they're trying to put those out as an aid for.
Sure.
Mostly for people who are probably unfamiliar with confession, you know, like, hey, welcome to confession. Like, we're so glad you're here kind of stuff, which is great.
And there's some, even the more introductory ones, that do a good job of say, here's a sin, and here is the opposing virtue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's also mm-hmm. something to go back to.
Those who are listening, go to our Facebook page or go to our social media and send us the one that you use.
Ooh, yeah.
And that way we can maybe compile a good list of examination of conscience.
So that I can actually, like, do it for me, people. Forget about everybody
for his
else.
Sanctity.
Just like, would you please do it for me?
Please
for
do it
sanctity.
For David.
Like, because I need it.
Yeah.
One other thing before we go. There's a lot of things I'm terrified to see at my judgment. Like at my judgment, there's, I don't know if you can wet your pants like in that moment.
I don't think so.
I'm also thinking not, but I might. I don't know. If it's possible, I probably will.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things I'm very scared of. One thing I'm very excited about, we're going to skip the scared ones, is seeing. Whenever we receive a blessing, at every Mass, we receive a blessing. And I think I've said this before on the show. Or like any time if you get blessed by a priest or your dad or, you know, whoever. I know that God isn't just like, oh, yeah, in general, like, okay, yeah, blessings, whatever, like good stuff. He'll give you good vibes. It's like, no. When you receive a blessing, especially from a priest, receiving a blessing from God, and he's very specific. That's the thing about him. Like, he knows everything that
very
you need.
Very intentional.
Right. And so I'm excited to see what the blessing was. What grace specifically did I receive at every blessing, right? Like at the end of every Mass, was it the ability to, you know, did he give me a little bit extra grace to say no, to reject a temptation, you know, that I wouldn't have had otherwise? Was it a new friend in my life that, you know, or a softening of my heart to receive a message where, you know, I wouldn't have received it well before? You know what I mean? Like, there's a, God is so specific that I just know he's doing something, and it's going to be something probably different every time, depending on what you need in that moment. But that's what I'm excited about, just to see, because he, like, how much he loves, just to be able to look back on it, like, he just loves you so much. Ugh. You know,
and like the blessings that you give your children every night, right? Like,
right.
That's going to be an amazing thing too. So like, you know, we bless our children every night, and then at some point in time in our, you know, in our final judgment, we will see those as well.
It's that's another thing. Yeah, the blessings that our like other people received, like especially for you, Father. I mean, you're going to bless like hundreds of thousands of people probably before, you know, like think about the grace, much less all the confessions, you know, like you're like a grace machine gun.
Fire hose.
Yeah. Fire hose. Yeah, nice.
I love that image always of the fire hose.
One of the
grace just pouring out. Yeah.
One of the things I've been thankful for he introduced this concept of praying for my sons for the grace at the moment of their first temptation for mortal sin. And I've prayed with them every single night, you know. So I'm thinking like, well, hopefully by the time they're like 9, you know, it's going to be a couple thousand Hail Marys. And that's going to do some damage.
You know? Oh, man. Yes. Just somewhat related to the beauty of blessings. Since we just received a blessing at the very end of Mass, St. Alphonsus Liguori talks about the special moment at your act of thanksgiving you make after Mass, which we overlook all the time. We don't talk about it enough. We don't see enough of us. I include myself in this. I don't do this enough publicly just so people can know this is important to do. Right after Mass, just kneel down, plop down, make that act of thanksgiving, because St. Alphonsus Liguori says that's one of the most important moments. And so tender, of course.
Because you still have Christ physically present within you.
Yes, it's, I mean, so intimate.
Depending on like how long the announcements go.
Exactly. You know? Right. That's why I try to keep it under 15 minutes. and he says, that which you ask, if you're open to grace, of course, at that moment, God will listen to you. Mm-hmm. God will grant you that. And so open yourself up, go to the sacraments, and make that act of thanksgiving with your family, and it'll go a long way.
Beautiful.
A saint said it, not me. So yeah, you know.
So you know, it's legit.
A doctor of the church. Yes.
Yeah. On moral theology, nonetheless.
Yeah.
So listen up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Father, it has been a blessing to have you on the show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this evening.
God bless you guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Bishop David Kondrla of the Diocese of Tulsa in Oklahoma. So let us pray. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to thy protection, implored thy help, or sought thy intercession, was left unaided. Inspired with this confidence, I fly to thee, O Virgin of Virgins, my Mother. To thee do I come. Before thee I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word Incarnate, despise not my petitions, but in thy mercy hear and answer me. Amen.